You're listening to a Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders 30th Anniversary Podcast. Founded in 1978, GLAAD is New England's leading legal rights organization dedicated to ending discrimination based on sexual orientation, HIV status, and gender identity and expression. For more information and updates on GLAAD's current legal work, visit us at glaad.org.
Her plane was leaving at 8 o'clock in the morning, which meant she would get up around 5 and leave for the airport. And she got up, got ready to leave, and she sat on the side of the bed and woke me up to say goodbye. And I remember her stroking my arm and just looking at me, and we just sort of, you know, we'd laugh and have a big smile and say goodbye to each other, give each other a kiss, and she said, "I'll call you when I get there." And I said, okay, and I had dozed off back to sleep, and I was to go into work for 10 o'clock that morning. And I remember waking up around 8 o'clock in the morning, I think it was just around 8:30 and 20 minutes to 9, and I woke up feeling this awful, awful pain in my stomach, like a stabbing pain. And I woke up, and I just thought that was odd. Because then I felt fine after that, but it was an excruciating pain, and which I realize now was when the plane crashed, and it's just so strange to me how I could feel her pain, but, I mean, that's how I look at it. So I got up and made my coffee, and I was downstairs. I had the Today Show on TV, and I was on the phone speaking to my daughter, which we just would say hello in the morning, and I remember Katie Couric interrupting the TV program saying that they had just had some news flash that a plane had crashed into the Twin Towers, and I didn't think too much of it, except that the time frame between when she would have left Boston and going to New York would have been just about right, 40 minutes or so. And then the news came on that they thought it was a specific airlines and a specific flight number, and I don't remember a lot after that. I think I said to my daughter, "I have to go. I think that's Carol's plane." And I ran to the refrigerator because she always posted on the refrigerator her itinerary, and I checked it, and it was. And that was it. I don't think I made any other phone calls. I don't remember a lot except that all of a sudden my house was full of people. You know, my family, her family, people from my work that had come. And I don't remember how that all happened, how they were aware of all that. I remember around noontime getting a phone call from her place of employment, Meditech, giving me their condolences, and because I was listed on, you know, Carol's health insurance, and I shared her health insurance, and she covered me, and I was certainly listed as a domestic partner at her work and next to kin, and they called me to tell me that they were very sorry. And I remember a lot of denial on my part, just thinking, but, you know, she's supposed to arrive at 2 o'clock and call me, and, you know, at least wait until 2 o'clock and see if she doesn't call. And, of course, the phone call never came.
The first newspaper account of Carol Fleazik's death in the Manchester, New Hampshire Union Leader on September 13th, 2001, described Carol's stunned family and friends. Carol's brother Mark and his wife Kathy wondered what her last thoughts had been on board American Airlines Flight 11, which hit the North Tower of the World Trade Center at 8:46 a.m. on September 11th. They wondered if they would ever find peace of mind. A colleague at Meditech, the Westwood, Massachusetts-based company where Carol worked, remembered Carol as a warm person, always helpful and smiling. In fact, her family and friends would later learn that Carol, a registered nurse, had rushed to help 3 Flight 11 passengers injured by the hijackers before the plane hit the Twin Towers. But this early newspaper account ignored a central part of Carol's life, something GLAAD would later fight to have honored and legally acknowledged: Carol's 12-year relationship with her partner, Nancy Walsh. Nancy and Carol met in 1987, when they both were working as emergency room nurses at Hale Hospital in Haverhill, Massachusetts. Nancy says they were friends at first, but they shared a great chemistry. Eventually, they fell in love.
Carol was wonderful, a wonderful person. She was very unique. person who would certainly beat her own drum. Big smile, quiet person until you first got to meet her. And then she was always the life of the party. She had a great sense of humor, always thought of other people before herself, always willing to help other people. Very smart. Just the sort of person that everyone wanted to be with. Everyone always wanted to be around her and be her friend. She didn't have to seek other people out. They all sought her out. She was a wonderful person.
Carol moved into Nancy's home in Bradford, Massachusetts, so Nancy's three school-aged children wouldn't be uprooted from their lives. Carol kept working to renovate her old Victorian home in Plainstow, New Hampshire, and the family moved there when the kids were older.
I have three children. They loved Carol. They loved her very much. They all got along very well with her. My sons adored her. And we all miss her. She never tried to be the parent. I mean, that was always very clear. She was a very strong role model in a lot of ways. She was very athletic as well as very talented. To be able to fix anything, and they bonded really well. She could help them with their homework. I mean, I think they went to her as a mentor, a confidant, a friend.
Nancy kept working at the hospital where they met, and Carol moved on to work at Meditech. They spent time together enjoying the simple things, being outdoors, gardening, traveling, spending time at the beach. The morning of September 11th, after Nancy got off the phone with her daughter, after she ran to the refrigerator to check Carol's itinerary, after she confirmed that Carol was scheduled to be on Flight 11, she called the airline. Maybe Carol had missed her flight. Maybe she was okay. But the airline wouldn't tell her anything. She and Carol weren't married. Nancy wasn't family.
You know, I know they have their rules. It just seemed incredibly cruel to me because I wanted to just shout to everybody that how could they not understand that Carol was my partner, and why weren't they telling me this? I mean, why did it have to go through, you know, family? And it just seemed so backwards to me. I remember thinking, this is so wrong. Why do I have to go through this red tape? I mean, it's bad enough and so painful. Why do people keep saying they can't tell me anything?
At 6 o'clock that night, more than 9 hours after Nancy first flipped on the Today Show, Carol's sister called the airline and confirmed that Carol was on Flight 11. Nancy was baffled when, not even 48 hours after the attacks, friends started suggesting she contact an attorney. Carol didn't have a will, but still, Nancy didn't think she'd have any trouble. They lived together, shared bank accounts, named each other as beneficiaries on retirement accounts and insurance policies.
More people were saying that to me. I think you better get yourself a lawyer. And I was so dazed. I'm like, what are you talking about? I mean, I really just didn't understand that the world didn't see that there would be any question. I just didn't think in this situation, I don't know, I was very naive and thought that why would I have to get a lawyer? It just didn't seem right to me that people would even question it. But, and then that was it. The pain just got worse and worse and worse. And thank God for Jennifer Levi, because she was, and Glad, they were absolutely a saint. I don't know what I would have done.
Glad senior staff attorney Jennifer Levi introduced Nancy to a local New Hampshire attorney to help her with probate issues, which, in the absence of a will and legal recognition of their relationship, were complicated. As far as New Hampshire law was concerned, she and Carol had been legal strangers. Jennifer Levi.
I remember at one point Nancy called me because she couldn't drive her car because it had been titled in Carol's name, and she couldn't get the title transferred over to Nancy. And then there was some issue about she couldn't even make the payments because they wouldn't credit it to the account for the car. And I worked with her to try to, you know, sort through some of those administrative hurdles, and there was a lot more compassion around those issues because of, you know, the national focus on that particular tragedy. But it was, you know, a good example of the kind of routine hurdles that people have to face when they lose family members for whom there is no legal recognition.
Glad also helped Nancy file a claim with the Federal Victim Compensation Fund, a $7 billion fund created by Congress shortly after 9/11, to compensate the families of victims who decided not to pursue independent lawsuits against the airlines. The almost 3,000 people who died in the 9/11 attacks belong to just as many families. But these families all look different. Defining family for the purposes of the fund was a challenge.
What Congress did was to say that it wasn't going to list or specify who it would regard as family, but that it would look to state law to determine whether individuals who were pursuing claims had a basis in state law to claim a relationship as family. Well, it doesn't take a rocket scientist in 2001 to figure out that no states regarded same-sex couples as lawful family, unless you had done something like create a will and designate someone as your lawful heir. And of course, what's true is that, you know, people in their 20s and 30s and 40s and even 50s don't think about the kind of tragedy that Nancy Walsh faced, and so most people don't have wills. And so effectively, you know, what everyone understood is that Federal Victims Compensation Fund would likely, without some kind of advocacy, ignore surviving gay and lesbian partners.
Congress appointed attorney Ken Feinberg, a past chief of staff to Senator Ted Kennedy and former prosecutor for the U.S. Attorney General's office, as the fund's special master to appraise the claims made by surviving family members. Levi says Feinberg was fair, smart, and honest.
Nobody wanted to perceive this as a partisan issue. It was a humanitarian program on the part of Congress, and nobody wanted to be embroiled in some kind of bitter political division. And he acknowledged at that meeting that there were all kinds of, a whole range of individuals who valued their relationship to decedents, who would not be regarded as family, having to do with state law, nothing to do with the Federal Victims Compensation Fund. He said right at the outset, you know, that in this room there may be fiancés who had, you know, 15-year relationships with decedents who intended to marry in, you know, October of 2001. There may be, adult family members of children who, you know, were partnered in ways that the families didn't like, who had cut off their children, you know, in different ways. There may be, and he references, there may be surviving same-sex partners. You know, there were this whole range of family constellations that he didn't want to decide whether or not those mattered in a big way. And that's why he explained, you know, the federal fund was just going to look to state law.
Working with New York law firm Kreindler & Kreindler, Glad helped Nancy paint a portrait of her life with Carol, who cooked dinner, made the kids' lunches, who fixed things around the house. Nancy says piecing together the claim was especially difficult. With every step, she had to prove the significance of her relationship, what Carol had meant to their family, what they had lost.
That was the reality of what happened once Congress made the decision to look exclusively to state law to determine who it was that was family. Because from a legal perspective, they had no wills, they weren't married, they couldn't be married, they couldn't do anything other than what they had done, which is to designate each other for retirement accounts, for example, or designate each other as, you know, legal contacts in case of emergency. But the reality is that in 2001 and still today in most states, same-sex couples are legal strangers to one another. And so she had a tremendously uphill battle to demonstrate that their lives revolved around each other.
Ultimately, Nancy and Carol's family filed a joint claim to the Victim Compensation Fund. Months after Glad represented Nancy at the hearing, the fund approved the claim. Nancy, finally, was recognized as Carol's partner. Nancy says this recognition was invaluable. She had stood up for herself and her life with Carol, and she says she couldn't have done it without Glad's support and encouragement. But the fight had taken a toll.
I mean, I was beginning to think, to question myself, you know, was this really real, this relationship? Of course, I knew it was, but I was just being beaten down so much by other lawyers that were calling me and that sort of thing, and I just thought, I need some verification. Yes, you know, this was real. I absolutely was in a relationship. I mean, I knew I was, but they were just so great. GLAAD was so great, you know, that you do have rights and we'll help you. And they made it a lot easier for me.
Jennifer Levi.
And I do remember telling her along the way that they created a beautiful family together. And, you know, I think part of what she needed reassurance around also was claiming her sense of emotional loss. I mean, I think when you hear so much how little regard the law has for your family, you probably do start to question whether or not that relationship matters in an emotional way, too. I went to her house many times, and we sat in her living room and had tea, and, you know, it was really, it moved me a lot, you know, to just be in the presence of somebody who suffered such a significant loss within such recency. And I did remind her a lot that they had a beautiful family and they had a beautiful home, and it was totally apparent to me from the pictures around the house and from the stories that she told that this was a relationship of tremendous significance.
When Nancy later visited Ground Zero, the Red Cross, which recognized domestic partners as family, gave her an urn full of ashes from the World Trade Center site. The official urn, the one given to all the families of survivors by Mayor Rudy Giuliani's office, had gone to Carol's parents. 7 years later, Nancy still works in the emergency room where she and Carol met. Each year on September 11th, she has a special remembrance for Carol, with her kids and friends from the hospital who knew them both. But this in some ways is a formality. Carol is present in her family's life every day.
My children's friends are all, you know, great friends, and they'll come over to me and they'll talk about Carol and how wonderful it was for them to see us together and, you know, open their minds up. And it's really, I get so emotional thinking about it, how wonderful it was and how painful it is not to have her. It's not always easy, obviously, but you do in your heart what you feel is right, and it is right. It will be right. And that's it.
Thank you for listening to this GLAAD 30th Anniversary Podcast. Visit GLAAD.org to learn more about this story and to download a new podcast on the 15th of every month.